Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, bringing the island's community together.
Are you with Vectis Radio this lunchtime? We've got a special guest in, and I haven't spoken to special guest. Must be, I'm trying to work it out because it was during COVID and it was over Skype. But welcome,
it's
first
been
of all,
2 years.
Toby Wallace, how are you?
I'm all right, a bit cold, but otherwise fine.
This cold spell is going on forever.
I know.
We seem to have a, you know, normally we have like a couple of days and then that's it. But we've had long periods where it's been cold.
And there's just so long the memory of a nice hot summer lasts you through this time of year, isn't there?
The thing that I can't ever work out is, how did we ever have a drought where we can't use it? Because we've had so much water last year and this year as well. It's incredible. But hey, how are you and how are the Samaritans?
I'm fine. Samaritans are doing well. I mean, we're very busy always. In the course of a year, nationally, this is not just the Isle of Wight Samaritans, but in the course of a year, we take, on average, a phone call from a distressed caller every 7 or 8 seconds. Year-round, all the year round. So, you know, we're always busy. And on the island, we've got currently got 70 volunteers. We're going up, always increasing the numbers slowly. We haven't yet got to the stage where we can run the phone lines from the branch every 24 hours a day. We still have, you know, times when we don't do it, but we are pretty busy.
How does it compare with, you know, I know we've kind of in the last couple of years we've had the COVID and so on. How does it compare to pre-COVID, how it is now?
I think the frequency of phone calls is actually about the same. Obviously, the topic of conversation has changed. I mean, when COVID first started and hit and we had lockdown and all that, we got a lot, obviously, just because in conversation, everybody was talking about the pandemic all the time. So that became the main topic of conversation in our phone calls. Didn't detect an awful lot of sort of like COVID-related specific COVID-related calls with different, you know, as a different topic. Although there were, I think it was well documented at the time, not just by Samaritans, that the incidence of domestic violence increased, particularly during lockdown, because people were cooped up.
Sure.
And that sort of did become a matter of concern. But to be honest, I think that the for me, the main concern that I have about our calls is that it is going to be the economic situation. That is, you know, it'll take a few months to work its way through, but people are already, you know, a lot of us are in real difficulties, and that has bound to have an impact on one's, you know, one's mental health and balance and everything.
Tragically, I mean, I can see things going up, and I say maybe it's not filtered through properly yet.
That's right.
I think the numbers for help and assistance and so on is going to go up massively unless we do something. Somebody's got to do something, but I think it's a little bit too late because it's still already starting to filter through.
Absolutely. But I do know that Citizens Advice have got, you know, having record numbers of people coming for advice and so on. And I think in due course. See, what tends to happen with Samaritans is that, with Samaritans callers, is that if something like that occurs, it's added to all the things that are already upsetting and distressing a person. So if they're already having difficulties, and then this comes on top of it, then before you know where you are, you've got a great mountain of problems all pushing you in one direction. And financial problems are a real difficulty, because people often end up, you know, if you've got extreme financial problems, you end up feeling that you've got no options left. And that's when it does start becoming dangerous from a Samaritan's point of view.
Some advice to give. I mean, you know, you're the one to give it. But I mean, I would say to people, don't leave it until, you know, the mountain's on top of you.
Yeah.
Do something. Try and do something. Talk to somebody before it arrives. If you know that you're going to be massively in debt, and you know that's going to lead to something, you have to try and help yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
But I just want to go back to this time of year. It's January. We're cold. We don't like the cold.
No.
We're dealing with it mentally, but there'll be a lot of people out there that will not like January or February. So are the numbers higher in January and February than it would be in the summertime?
Not really. I think we do have peak days. And there is a few peak days around Christmas and a few peak days around New Year. And I think that sort of, I imagine that at this stage of the year, people are sort of beginning to, you know, they're running out of life. They're running out of enthusiasm. They're running out of energy. And so, I suppose you might get that. But to be honest, what we do, the way our calls are handled, we've got 201 branches across the UK and Ireland as well, and it's an automatic system. So when somebody calls our number, our emergency number, they will get through to whoever is available at the time, the first person who's available, which is an obvious way of doing it, you know. So it's geographically independent. So you don't tend to get to be aware of sort of when we look at our statistics, we only get a number of calls that we've had. We haven't necessarily got a breakdown in detail of what the topics were and so on and so forth. So it's difficult to get that sort of information out, particularly because, of course, we do we are very careful about confidentiality in the content, related to the content, of course.
So I want to talk about recruitment, but in a bit. I just want to ask you, so just say, for instance, if there are people out there that are needing to speak to somebody, needing to make that telephone call, what number do they ring and what happens? What is then the process? Just say, for instance, somebody rings up and they are in fear of their life or their health and safety.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, there is one national number. It's 116123, which is a slightly peculiar number, but it's because it's a toll free number, and it has the prefix is 116, and then 123 is just our number. It's totally free, and not only is it free, but it won't get recorded on an itemized phone bill as a call that you've made. So it's completely confidential. When the phone obviously then will be routed through this system and will come, say I'm the next available listening volunteer and I've just finished a call, and it will then ring on my phone. I'll pick it up and we'll talk. I never see anybody's phone number. We also do have an email system where you send an email to Joe, which is just joe@samaritans.org. And again, we pick those up. We don't know what your email address is or anything. We just discuss, we just answer your queries or listen to your problems. And we do it mainly on phone calls. And we are trained as Samaritans, is an extremely effective training process, but we are trained in listening skills, because that's really what we're doing. We're focusing on the person's difficulties and whatever they want to talk about. There is, because Samaritans has got this established reputation of being a suicide prevention charity, which we are, it is the focus of our thing, but people tend to think that you can only call Samaritans if you're feeling suicidal. That isn't true. You can ring up and talk at any time with anything that's troubling you. For example, if you're lonely, because we have a principle, talking about loneliness, a principle that today's lonely person could be tomorrow's suicide. And you know, it's very important to get to deal with things early. Likewise, I mean, you mentioned the business about finance and you know, getting in touch with people early. The same applies to emotional difficulties. If you're having a problem, you know, just give us a ring. It's free. It's anonymous, and we are trained to be non-judgmental. We actually have a principle that we don't give advice as such, because that can sort of steer the conversation into a situation where the caller is asking me what I think about their problem, And actually, the important thing is, what does the caller feel about their problem?
Sure.
So the focus remains on the caller very much.
Okay. So when, just say for instance, you make that call,
yeah.
Is it fair to say that the person that you're going to be talking to on the other end of the line, i.e. the Samaritan, they are ordinary people just like you and me, but they've had the training?
Yeah. Yes, it is. This year is our 70th year. And so we've had a lot of, obviously, a lot of experience in doing this. That's why the training is so good. But yes, I mean, we are, you know, we would definitely not be, we'll definitely not be in the hands of anybody who's untrained. And we are the founder of Samaritans referred to Samaritans as ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And that is it. I mean, I think one of the two... There are two things that people respond to when they hear that I'm a Samaritan, socially. One of them is, I think you chaps do a wonderful job, which I agree with, and I wouldn't say just chaps, but, you know, all of us. But the other thing is, number two, they say, I could never do what you do. And actually, you'd be surprised, an awful lot of people can. You, as long as you've got an inherent wish to help people, to support people, and a degree of empathy, then you can do it. You have a short time on the telephone with somebody. I mean, it can be 1 or 2 hours. I think the longest call I know of, and it, fortunately for me, I didn't have to take it, was 5 hours long. But it's about, and that is the extent of your relationship with that person. So you have to be able to communicate quickly with them, put them at ease, get them to talk to you about what really is the problem and what's troubling them, and listen. We do call ourselves primarily listening volunteers rather than advice givers.
Okay, brilliant. So, I mean, you pick up the phone, you speak to somebody, and I was going to ask, because I'm now kind of not doubting the question, but I'm pre-guessing the answer.
Right.
We're going to go on to recruitment. This might lead us on to. Because when you phone, who are you talking to? Where are they? It makes more sense if they weren't local.
Yes.
Because that could increase the problem or anxiety.
Yes, particularly in a place like the Isle of Wight, where there's a small and limited community. I mean, we do, well, before COVID, we did accept people coming to visit us face-to-face and have a face-to-face consultation. We're just... where the organisation generally is deciding where we go with that, whether we take open up again or how we organise it, because there are other challenges about topics like safeguarding and the safety of staff and all that sort of stuff. But on the island we always got a very small number of people coming to visit, and I think it was partly because the community is small. You know, you might actually, the chances of you bumping into somebody, you know, in a supermarket after you've poured your heart out to them are quite high. We would always respect your anonymity, and we wouldn't acknowledge you unless you came and said hello to me. But you know, all the same, the whole idea of, you know, you don't have to live here that long to know that to feel that everybody knows somebody.
Yeah, sadly, yeah.
Well, that could be an advantage.
Well, yeah. So how long have you been a Samaritan?
I've been a Samaritan now for 7 years.
Right.
And I was working it out the other day. I think I've probably taken something in the region of 1,200 to 1,500 hours of phone calls.
Wow.
Altogether. There is a lot of need out there, a lot of need. And, you know, we're very keen to try and meet it.
Okay, so we can help by telling people that, you know, you could become a Samaritan. What do they have to do?
Right, well, there are two different types of volunteer for Samaritans. Number one is what we call the listening volunteer, which is doing, answering the phones. So then you'll go through the training, which is a total duration of about 6 weeks, but it's a weekly 3-hour session, and there's some online work as well in the meantime. And we also have people called support volunteers, and they are people who have got particular, might have particular skills, such as a treasurer, being an accountant, being a treasurer, or somebody who's, you know, works on the maintenance of the of our buildings, or any number of, you know, those kind of things. And of course, we have staff for our shop, which is sort of our lifeblood, because it provides finance for us to be able to carry on doing it. We have to be self-financing. But in both cases, if anybody is interested in applying to volunteer for Samaritans, you just can go to our website, which is www.samaritans.org, and, you know, fairly close to the front page, you'll see a link which says if you're thinking of volunteering, and then you can go through a whole thing where they talk about, you know, what there is, what sort of vacancies are available, what you are expected to do. A short questionnaire about, here are some one or two principles, you know, that you might like to check whether you feel happy with them, about how you, you know, whether you're an appropriate person. And then you can apply through that, through the website. We then will, from the Isle of Wight, we will then contact you and arrange for an interview. And at the moment, this cycle, it's at the stage at the moment I'm doing selection interviews for our next intake at the moment. And then basically after that, you start training, and 6 weeks later, you've got the basics, and then we support you all the time. I mean, Samaritans as an organisation is very supportive, so we'll support you through the next stage, which is where you have a mentor, and you listen to them taking phone calls and discuss it, and then when you're ready, you take a few phone calls with them there, metaphorically holding your hand and looking after you and passing you notes about what to do and what to say, dissecting it afterwards and seeing how it worked and all that sort of stuff. That stage can last anything up to, I suppose, 6-9 months sometimes, depending on the... It's at your own pace as the trainee.
So just to make the point then, when you do make that call for help, you're not talking to someone that's just been, you know, had a week's training and they've actually been doing it for a while.
That's right. I mean, not only do we have to be, you know, it's a weird thing, the training. It's sort of like it's an attitude shift in the way you talk to people. And you become much more conscious of how you're talking to people and how you're conducting a conversation with somebody. And in that respect, I think one of the things that listening volunteers often say to me is, I hadn't realised it was going to change me quite so much. I hadn't realised it was going to impact on my own life, and I was going to get so much out of the training and just doing it. It's an aspect of life, you know, discussing things and so on that we never actually, very seldom actually study. It's something that we just do, and fair enough. And it's part of social lubrication, isn't it? You know, talking to people and so on. It's quite interesting to formalize it and to see how you can, you know, how you can help somebody. The amazing thing is, at the end of lots of our phone calls, every volunteer will tell you that at the end of lots of phone calls, the caller will say, thank you very much for your advice. And actually, we know from our training that we haven't given them any advice. What we've done is we've helped them explore their options. Mm. And just, you know, it sort out any ways forward. It's Samaritan helps you solve your problems rather than solves your problems for you.
Sure. I think that's the way it's got to be, isn't it?
It's got to be. I mean, I often draw the parallel with giving up smoking. If you want to get somebody to give up smoking, you're not going to achieve much just by taking their packet of cigarettes away. You've got to talk to them about how they feel and about why they want to give up, or if they want to give up, or how they feel about, you know, all that sort of stuff. And if you've ever given up smoking, which I have, well, several times, but the last time it stuck, you can only do it when you are ready to do it yourself. And you can't do it for an external reason, because somebody has come along and told you to stop.
Just like if you're one of those people that wanted to make the call needs to make the call. Just, you know, you've got to do it in your own time.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we've had this conversation, because it's a case of, it will set people's minds at ease. You're not just talking to Joe Bloggs.
No, absolutely.
Or he's Joe Bloggs, but he's had the training.
Yeah.
He's down to earth. She's down to earth. They're just like you and me.
Yeah.
And they will be able to help.
But, yes.
They're not just dragged in off the street and there you go. There's a telephone answer it now and again.
No.
They've had, you know, months and months of training.
Yes.
And obviously they care, which is the most important thing.
Yes, that's.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have volunteered in the first place.
Yes, that's where they come from, where our volunteers always come from, you know, a sense of wanting to help people and support them.
Okay, and the other way of volunteering is, you mentioned the shop.
Yes.
So what is it? You obviously work it within a shop?
No, we've got a charity shop in Newport in Lugley Street, and it's, you know, it's your standard charity shop, although actually it has been extremely successful over the years and helped us survive through the through lockdown. So we it does produce a lot of stuff for us, and they're super people. They have a lovely, there's a lovely atmosphere there. I've been there, you know, obviously a number of times, just to visit and to see how they're getting on and so forth. And the amazing thing is that people just drop in to see them, customers just drop in to see them, not necessarily because they want to buy something, but just to say hello to them because they know them. And it's sort of a little mini community feeling there. And it spreads through to the people who work there. I mean, that would only happen if you've got those, you know, nice people who are keen on what they do. And a lot of our shop volunteers really, you know, find that it gives them a huge boost to the to their lives generally, just doing it. And we are always, we're always looking for volunteers for the shop, because it, you know, it generates that rather important commodity called money, which keeps us going and paying our, able to pay our phone bill and so on.
So can we say, just say for instance, if there's people listening now that think I want to be involved in the shop, I'm not too sure about them, you know, taking phone calls and so on, but I want to help out in the shop, would it be okay to say, pop along?
Oh yes.
And have a little look, have a little nose and see what the atmosphere is like, and then maybe ask within?
Yeah, I mean, talk to, you know, our manager Georgie is there most days, and just, you know, go along any time and talk to the staff, have a chat, see how you feel.
Did I dream you saying something earlier on about that, you know, there's a number of people that don't realise that we're accepting stuff now?
Oh yeah, well no, it's not that so much. It's that what has one, I mean, interestingly, in terms of calls, we were discussing whether life has changed with the economic situation. But in terms of the shop, it has, because conventionally what happens, as you can imagine, with a charity shop is you get people's winter clothes at the end of the winter. So then you have to store them until the next winter, because you can't sell them in the spring or the summer.
Right.
So we always have to store stuff. But our donations, as we call them, people bringing stuff, you know, for us to sell, have really dropped off recently. I think it's partly, to be honest, the weather. It's also partly the economic situation, and people are just, in general, I don't know about you, but I feel as though I don't dare do anything in case something breaks any moment, if you know what I mean. There's that sort of rather tense feeling you get when the whole world is meant to be, you know, lots of things going on. So we're really, you know, we're very keen to get people to donate stuff as well.
When can we? Because what we used to see is a lot of, during COVID and before, people used to just come down and dump things outside of shops.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not really good enough. Because if if it's chucking it down with rain, I nearly said something else then. If it's chucking it down with rain, the stuff's going to get ruined anyway. So when is a good time to drop it down?
That's true. And actually, in fact, it's against the law to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're actually littering a place. So during shop opening hours, which are sort of, you know, to be honest, I'm not absolutely sure what they are, but they're bound to be sort of nine till five or nine till six, something like that, and open 6 days a week. And we always need new helpers.
Right, okay. So if you can either go onto the website, find out more details.
But if it's the shop, it's much... I just think it's much more sort of an immediate contact thing, a personal contact thing, and just go along to the shop and drop in and say hello to us, and, you know, see how you feel about the place.
How brilliant.
Lovely to see you.
It helps... obviously keeps things ticking over as well. You know, more importantly, it might clear a shelf in your house.
Well, yes, that's right, particularly after Christmas. But just as a quick point, our branch costs us £150 a day to run. So, you know, we do need a continual injection of money.
Donations. That's quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is quite a lot. Hey, look, I know, well, I'm hoping that you're going to be back on a regular basis.
I'd love to.
During the course of 2023, because I think there are lots of things to promote, talk about, let people know what's available, how they can help and how they can be helped and so on. And I just got to ask you this. Your involvement 7 years, how much has it changed? As it got, I'm guessing because of legislation changing all the time, it gets more difficult to put things in place.
It gets more complicated. You have to think about more things at once. For example, when I joined, there was no formal procedure for safeguarding, i.e., how we react if we've got somebody who is at risk, who is either a child or an adult at risk, and now we have much more formalised procedures. So I wouldn't say there's a lot more of that, but there is more of that going on, and so we have to be a little bit, you know, more careful. But we are always retaining our basic principles, which are confidentiality, non-judgmentalness, and giving people the right to make their own decisions.
Okay. We're going to finish up with details, phone numbers again.
Okay.
But before I ask that question, I want to take you back. You've been a Samaritan for 7 years.
Yeah.
I want to take you back 10 years. Okay. Yeah. How has your life changed, and how you know from 10 years ago, and how is it changed now with regards to how does it make you feel being doing what you're doing?
I love it. I mean, I love doing the course. At the end of every shift, you feel, my God, I'm lucky, because other people are in such bad condition and you have done what you can to help them. And if you have a call, or, you know, maybe three or four calls where you actually feel that people, maybe sometimes we get people who call up who are, you know, so upset that they can't talk because they're crying so much. Mm. And after talking to them and listening to them and interacting with them for an hour and a half or whatever, they sort of say, thank you very much, I feel a lot better now. It's surprising how much sort of like pressure cooker steam can be taken out of you or can be released during a conversation. One of my favourite quotes is that in the fight against suicide, the value of a single conversation should never be underestimated. It can have a huge impact. You can actually sense that you've saved lives. And that is, you know, well, there's no greater privilege than being able to do that, really.
Wow. That's the answer that I wanted, and you know, it fills me with, and I'm sure other people listening will be thinking exactly the same thing. A bit more faith in humanity, a bit more faith in people.
Yeah,
you know, because I think over the last couple of years, with you know, leaderships and so on, you just look at it and you think, well, where is it? Where's the faith gone? Well, it's still there.
Yes,
you just got to look for it.
Well, we tend to work in, as it were, in the shadows. We don't make a big song and dance about what we do, but I think it's important that people realise that it is an active thing that's going on to help develop society.
Web details?
Yeah, right. Website is, guess what, www.samaritans.org. And once you get there, you can explore. It's a big website, quite comprehensive. And the phone number, if you do want to talk to one of our listening volunteers, again, is 116123. That's all you have to dial. Or you can send an email to Joe, which is jo@samaritans.org. And then sometimes people prefer to communicate by email rather than by the spoken word.
Fabulous. Toby Wallace, thank you very much for joining us, and hopefully you'll be back again very soon.
I hope I will. Thank you for your time.